Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Manola Theatre acknowledges the traditional custodians on the land on which we meet, gather and make art, the Yagara and Turrbal people, and we acknowledge their elders past, present and emerging.
This is our final bonus episode of Begotten. You're here with Kat Decker.
I'm Bianca Butler-Reynolds.
We are the creative team behind Manola Theatre and Begotten, the five-part audio fiction that you may have listened to four parts of so far.
Yes, we only have one to go, which is a little bit sad, but if I can be so bold, I think the last one is actually my favourite. I think it's a lovely note to end on, and hopefully our listeners will discover that next week.
I reckon they'll love it.
So this week for our final bonus, I am going to put on my interviewing hat and talk to Kat a little bit about what it's like to be a director, both within and without the constraints of coronavirus and everything shutting down. So Kat, to start us off, do you want to talk a little bit about when the world is operating as it usually does and we're allowed to do rehearsals and performances in theatres, what is important to you as a director? What sort of philosophy or process do you like to work with?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Thank you, Bianca. So I kind of cut my teeth on directing in some strange places. I've always loved hanging around in theatres and have worn a few different hats at different points. But when I was 20, 21, I believe, I got the opportunity to work alongside the Queensland Shakespeare Ensemble on their project called the Shakespeare Prison Project, which, as the name suggests, goes into prisons and incarcerated spaces and works with the people who live in those spaces to put on a piece of Shakespeare. And so I went in there initially to observe, and then I became a facilitator, and then eventually I started directing some of those projects. Before I was doing too much work with free people in the real world, I was learning how to direct normally first-time actors in, what is quite a strange world of its own limitations. So I guess what I learned in that, I learned so many things in those projects, but as a director, I learned just to very much rely on finding the power and creativity of the people I was working with, and that the creative people involved in that space are the most important thing. I don't know if that makes sense, but I would say that's maybe my philosophy. I haven't written it down. I might work on it.
Do you have a particular memory from your prison project experiences? There may be multiple memories where you were just really, impressed or blown away by the potential of this process to make a change for people?
Yes, I have dozens of those experiences. I think that would be one of the most overwhelming parts of being part of that project for a number of years was seeing consistently people with very limited confidence, particularly when it came to performing, over the period of a few months that we worked, just really blossom into fantastically engaging actors on a stage. And I do have to say that the performances of Shakespeare I watched in that space have been the most funny, the most comprehensible, the most authentic versions of those shows, of many of those shows that I've experienced. So yeah, I think across the 5 years I worked on that project, being able to learn how to foster someone's creativity, help them find their own unique voice, because it's it's particularly Shakespeare that we work with, and so you're asking people who feel as though maybe theatre is not for them, and then Shakespeare specifically is not for them. Shakespeare is for people with money and private schools, and has been performed by the best actors across centuries. And you're asking them to have a go at it, and so needing to frame each performance as may not be the best Romeo that has ever been, but only you will be able to do your version of Romeo. And so I suppose I try and take that into rehearsal spaces, both inside and out of incarcerated spaces, the uniqueness of every actor, and helping people find their own relationship to character.
Sure. That's really interesting. And I think actually speaks a little bit to what we were touching on last time we did a bonus episode with people's use of their own archetypes as a way of finding their access point to a character. It sounds a little bit like what you're saying there.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't it's been a little while since I've worked on the Shakespeare Prison Project. We poured our passion into Manola Theatre and a few other things came along, and so I'm taking a bit of a break from that. So I haven't gone into that space, having learnt from you the bits I know about archetypal theory, but I would be very interested to go with that new lens and see how those spaces work, knowing what I know now.
Great. One thing I'm curious about is then when you transition out of working in an incarcerated environment to a theatre on the outside, what, if anything, are the key differences that you notice when you're working as a director in a free space?
I mean, there are lots of similarities. I always really try and cultivate a rehearsal room that feels safe and open, that people are there for the joy of it, because, you know, in independent theatre, we're not there for the money. Trying to embrace how a community is formed through an artistic experience.
Yeah.
Most of the projects I work on, being independent theatre, and having to work around the lives of the people involved, do happen over a period of a few months. And so I know those lucky bastards who get to get paid for their job might have a 3-week rehearsal period or something like that. But for us, I really love that. I really love forming the particular family of every show we're involved in, being able to foster that creative space and hopefully allow all people involved in the production to feel as though they have just as much right as anyone to make a suggestion and throw out an idea. And I'm at the moment exploring my practice as a teaching artist. Workshopping with both creatives early in their career and people who don't identify as having a creative practice, but who will find some benefit from interacting with theatre. And one of the things I heard early on in this study of teaching artistry is that the work of a teaching artist and the work of a director are very much aligned. And I really like that, that my role as a director is to facilitate space and to empower people to find their own artistry, and ideally not really to make too many decisions, just to make it possible for other people to find that out for themselves.
Well, that's great. It kind of leads in an interesting way to a key question that I wanted to ask you today, and I'm probably the weirdest person in the world to ask you this question, but Kat, what's it like directing a writer to perform their own words?
Yeah, it's a weird one, hey. So if you've listened to these bonus episodes already, you'll know that Bianca and I had our first true collaboration when I was directing her in her own work. Love You, Hate You, Drive You Wild. One day, hopefully, we'll be remounted and you should all come and see it. It's great.
There's a talking moose.
There is.
There's an overweight David Bowie impersonator. So much good stuff.
So that has kind of been the foundation of our working relationship, Bianca, is having had that experience. And it was daunting when we first did it, Bianca wrote this beautiful piece. I really resonated with it as soon as I read it. I found it very funny and very moving. And I'd seen Bianca as a performer multiple times before and was very impressed with her chops. And then, yes, needing to combine the respect I felt for her wearing both those hats and then tell her what to do with it. So I think I would be cautious to make it a habit of directing lots of different people in their own writing. But it's one of the reasons we founded a company together, because we found a way to make that relationship work. And I think early on we discussed the kind of transfer of perspective that you were no longer in the rehearsal space wearing your writer's hat and kind of transferred the ability to look at this piece from the outside to me and to exist on the inside of it as an actor in that creative process. And I've always found the give and take that we've developed with that to be easy and to be mutually beneficial. I don't know, do you agree?
Yeah. I was just reflecting as you were saying that on well, since we've started Manola Theatre, every time we've done a production, regardless of what other roles we've held, we've shared the producing duties of the show 50-50. But Love You, Hate You was an interesting one where I was already self-producing this work and I brought you on specifically as a director, but pretty much did all the producing duties myself. And so as well as being writer and performer, I was making all the business decisions about the show. And so
such a crazy decision.
Yeah, it was wild. I think there was a decision made early on between us that in order to keep the rehearsal room a kind of sacred space where I could exist just as an actor and take notes and get feedback, we would designate specific times to be production meetings and they would be separate from rehearsals. And so much like moving between different characters or different archetypes, I could swap hats between those spaces. And so at production meetings, I would be there with a business mind on and making those decisions. And then when we went to rehearsals, that was a different process. And I got to kind of strip off one identity and put another one on. And yeah, I think the fact that we were always on a similar wavelength with what we wanted to communicate through the play, I was able to invest absolute trust in your vision.
That's very nice. And then we knew from the get-go, Begotten was written for a specific outcome, which was to be performed by you as a one-woman show, and to be something that we could have as a long-term project for the company, that we wouldn't just do one production of this, but that it would be developed over a variety of showings. And we had originally planned to tour the piece as well. This was when we thought it would happen in a theatre before all the theatres closed down and broke our hearts. So I knew what I was signing up for before you'd even written many of the words on the page. And I think by that point, having worked on five or six shows together and really found our language of collaboration, we'd also had the experience of you being directed by me in another one-woman show that hadn't been your writing. But I think the way we worked on Begotten followed a very similar format. And that's a weird thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being a solo performer in a show, rehearsing to one other person.
It's very different from being in a scene with other people. Absolutely.
Yeah. In what ways?
Well, one of the things I really enjoy so much about the theatrical process is the relationships you build with the rest of the team. And when the team is two people and you're in very different roles from one another, I'm not going to say it's lonely, but it's different because you're not going through that same process of relationship building that you would normally have with a fellow actor.
Mm. So why do we do it?
I think because we're nerds for beautiful text, and sometimes monologue can communicate things that a conversation can't. I mean, conversation communicates many wonderful, wonderful things, and there will always be room for that in the work that we make. But monologue texts, I think, just let you go so deep and so rich into material. And so that's something that we value, I think, as well as it being a much more translatable, travelable package, as we'd sort of talked about with the touring perspective.
I agree. I will say that the process of directing you when we thought we were putting on a in-person stage show versus the audio format that everyone is hearing, that definitely had some shifts. And I'm glad that we got as much in-person rehearsal time as we had prior to transitioning it into the audio format, because we did a lot of discovery work, a lot of kind of foundational decision making in the room together. And while some of that was beautiful physical decisions that I can't wait to share with the world, some of that was also character building and finding relationship with text. And so we managed to spend some time rehearsing with each of the characters before we didn't see each other for quite some time, except over Zoom. And so when we started the recording process and decided that you would record a number of takes, and then my role as director was largely to choose between those takes rather than giving you feedback in the moment. It meant that, some of that foundational work had been done.
Yes.
That being said, I do think that the nature of the setup meant that I took more of a backseat than I would have in a traditional production that we put on. And so I just need to acknowledge that Begotten is so much yours. I mean, everyone can hear your voice, and we know that you're the writer as well, but a lot of those in the moment decisions being made of how to approach the recording takes, that was happening all by yourself in a room. So that's a huge thing you did.
Well, I appreciate that. I would also say that my crippling insecurity means that I'm very reliant on having someone listen to it and give me some feedback and help me navigate which choices were the most successful. So it's absolutely still a collaboration, although I thank you for your kind words.
Awesome.
Well, I think that was pretty much all I wanted to ask you for today. Thank you for sharing your insights as a director.
A pleasure. It's been fun doing these little chats.
It really has.
So we think this is our last one, our last little bonus episode. Although if you've loved listening to us and want us to have a regular podcast, I guess tell us.
Yeah, for sure.
If you're not already, you should be following us on Facebook and Instagram.
Yep. At Manola Theatre, M-I-N-O-L-A.
Hey, Bianca, why are we called Manola Theatre?
Well, Kat, have you heard of this guy Shakespeare? He wrote this play called The Taming of the Shrew. Is about the Manola sisters, Katharina and Bianca, and the fact that those were our names was just too good a coincidence to overlook.
That's a pretty good one. And Manola is just a pretty word.
It is a pretty word.
So you can head to our website, manolatheatre.com.au, where you can download your own copy of Begotten in full, in the way it was first presented to the world as a full radio play. You can also give us a little bit of money if that's something you would like to do to support us as independent creatives. We wouldn't say no. And Bianca, I think we need to talk a little bit about where we're recording and who supported us into making this into a five-part podcast.
Absolutely. We are so delighted to be being hosted for this podcast version of Begotten by That's Not Canon Productions, headed by the inimitable. Oh, that was going to be so cool until I messed it up.
Oh, no.
The inimitable Zane Webber. Thank you very much, Zane.
Thanks so much, Zane. So, the creation of the radio play, the five parts that you're hearing each character, that was happening during the peak of the lockdown in all of our separate bedrooms and home offices. But these conversations, we've been lucky enough to be able to be out in real life recording in the That's Not Canon studio. So that's been really fantastic. And thanks, Zane, for letting us come and hang out. It's been awesome.
Thank you. And thanks to our listeners for joining us on this journey. We might hand you over now to our final preview of the final episode of Begotten, which is joining the matriarch Leisha in her home of Ireland.
Enjoy listening to her. And yeah, tell us if you've liked being on this journey with us.
If you ever want to get in contact, hit us up on our socials or hello@manolatheatre.com.au.
Bye.
Bye. My family always said I was gifted. Magic, somehow. My aunties were superstitious and tried to tell me that I was like a Celtic goddess. I thought they were mad. I had something of a gift, and I suppose it made me a bit odd, but it was also inconsistent. I would at times know the outcome of a game before it had been played, or see the face of an old acquaintance in a dream the night before meeting them again.
I sensed my Uncle Thomas's workshop would burn down a week before it happened, but I was a child and thought it a coincidence rather than a warning. When my auntie learned I'd had the vision and said nothing about it, she hit me hard across the face and said her husband died because of me. The rest of the family were wary of me after that, convinced that something that existed only in my mind had the power to curse them all. But Eamon came to my rescue. He didn't blame me for his brother's death. I was just a child who'd had a bad dream. My family began to trust me again, reluctantly, after I burned my hand on the stove. They reasoned that if I'd anticipated that happening, I'd have done something to prevent it. I was declared to be not a witch, but a sort of accidental apprentice wise woman in whom the gift might appear as rarely or as often as a sneeze. The time of my birth was thought to be the reason. My Auntie Deirdre, forever gripping her whiskey bottle as if it were fused to both palms, proclaimed that a child born on the stroke of midnight at the turn of a century might conceivably catch a glimpse of the other world. That secret supernatural realm that shares the land with us. I didn't care to be magic. I just wanted my family to be kind.
I don't believe in coincidences. How much shit can happen on one street? One little insignificant street. Quiet, suburban, nothing shady until a year ago, and now two families are destroyed. A disappearance and a death exactly 1 year apart, and they live next door to each other? Something strange was going on Hazel Street, and I was going to find out.
Golden Ash, an episodic crime drama from That's Not Canon Productions.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.